that mean? Asked the Navajo president.
It means the U.S. government will stop funding us when the new fiscal year starts. She can't do that, Jamie protested. She's done it. Congress won't let her get away with it, he insisted. But he knew he was clutching at straws. Dex's expression was halfway between a sneer and a scowl of disgust. The Navajo president said, Other nations help to fund the program, too, maybe. America puts in the lion's share, Dex said. Once Washington pulls out, the others will do the same. But we're sunk, Dex growled. Screwed. Dead in the water. Not while I breathe, Jamie said to himself. Not while there's a beat left in my heart. Tithonium Chasma, The Dig. Carlton would not allow Doreen to handle the explosives. Not that they were actually dangerous, but he would not take any chances. She might be just what she says she is, he told himself. A nanotech engineer with nothing better to do while she's here on Mars. But she might be another plant by those psalm-singing sons of bitches, he fumed inwardly as he planted the strips of plastique in a careful pattern across the bottom of his excavation. Who knows? She might be one of those fanatics who'd be willing to blow herself up just to destroy me, like the old suicide bombers back in the Middle East years ago. Still, he was glad of her company. He talked to her as he put down the strips of plastic explosive, absently chatting away as if they were strolling along a campus path back on Earth. Everything we know in biology supports Darwin's concept of evolution through natural selection, he was saying. Hell, biologists have even watched populations of fishes splitting into separate species in lakes in Africa. But so many people are against Darwin, Doreen said, more to keep him talking than out of conviction, he thought. She was sitting up on the lip of the pit, her nano-suited legs dangling into the excavation. No, nothing, fundamentalists, he grumbled as he worked. It was impossible to bend far enough inside the hard-shell suit to lay down the doughy strips. Carlton had to get down on his knees. As he worked, he crawled along the rough base of the pit like an oversized infant encased inside a robot. I think they see Darwin as a challenge to their beliefs, Doreen said. I think they don't think at all, he groused. They just follow orders from their know-nothing ministers. Now be fair, Doreen countered. If Darwin's right and we humans are just another kind of animal, it destroys their belief that we're special, that we were created by God separate and apart from all the animals. Yeah, and given dominion over the earth so we can slaughter all the other animals and chop down all the trees and just generally screw up the environment. It destroys their belief that God sent his only son to redeem our souls, Doreen said firmly. It hits them where it hurts the most. You don't understand, he said. It's not about religion. It's about politics. It's about power. Their leaders use religion to keep their followers in line. When you're told you're doing God's work, you're willing to do just about anything they tell you to. But they really believe their religion. Of course they do. That's what makes them so ruthless. They think they're on God's side. Doesn't everybody? He looked up at her from his kneeling position. Is that what you believe?
It's what they believe, Professor.
And you? What about you? She hesitated a long moment before answering.
I'm not certain of what I believe. I know that I don't have all the answers, that's for sure.
But you're a Christian.
A Quaker.
Surprised, he blurted, A Quaker?
Society of Friends, Doreen said.
I never met a Quaker before, Carlton admitted.
There aren't that many of us. We've only got 4 regulars at Cellini.
A Quaker, Carlton mused silently. William Penn was a Quaker. Philadelphia was founded by the Quakers. The University of Pennsylvania, too, if I remember right. But the university isn't run by Quakers anymore. Hasn't been for a long time. He felt the old anger simmering inside him again. Squatting on the floor of the excavation, he craned his neck to see Doreen up on the lip of the pit. A Quaker. Could a Quaker be a Matahari? He asked himself. Not very likely, he answered. Or are you just thinking with your testicles again? Finally, he finished laying out the explosive strips and planting the thumb-sized detonators in them. Carlton laboriously slipped the climbing rig's harness over the shoulders of his hard suit, then pressed the button on it that activated the winch. Through the thin Martian air, the winch's motor sounded like the faint whine of a mosquito. Once he reached the lip of the excavation, Doreen came over to help him out of the harness. Then he took her gloved hand and led her 50 paces from the rim of the pit. "You're going to set it off?" she asked. "Got to call control back at the base," he said, pecking at the suit's radio keypad on his left wrist. "The geologists want to know when I blast so they don't get their seismometer records screwed up." She watched him as he called the base and told the excursion director he was ready to fire the explosives. "Hold on while I check with the rock jocks," the controller's cheerful young voice came through his helmet earphones. Doreen started to ask, "Do they ever stop you from..." "Dr. Carlton, you're cleared to detonate at 11:15 precisely. It's now 11:06:33. 11:06:33, Carlton repeated, his eyes on the digital clock set into the wrist pad. "Check. I'll blow at 11:15 on the tick." The explosion, when it came, disappointed Doreen. It wasn't a ground-shaking blast, just a little whump, followed by a cloud of dust that slowly wafted away from the pit. She walked beside Carlton to the edge of the excavation. Its floor was covered now with broken, shattered bits of rock. "Now we start the day's real work," he said to her. It took hours to spade up the rubble, pack it into containers, and hoist it up to the surface. Carlton was impressed with Doreen's willingness to work, and the fact that she could move so much more easily in her nanosuit than he could in his unwieldy hard shell. The strangely small sun climbed higher in the saffron sky. "Temperatures getting up to 20 below," Carlton surmised as they hauled rock shards to the sifter. He felt perspiration trickling along his ribs and saw Doreen absently try to wipe her brow, only to bump her gloved hand against the spongy bubble of her inflated helmet. "You should have worn a headband," he told her. "Keeps the sweat out of your eyes." Blinking hard, she said, "I didn't think I'd be sweating when it's so cold." "The suit keeps your body heat in. Now you tell me." The sifter rattled away. Carlton stopped it to study the contents of the tray beneath it, running his gloved fingers through the dust, finding nothing more than grains of rusty sand. Then he and Doreen poured still another load of shattered rock and started the machine rattling again. Even in the gentle gravity of Mars, his arms were starting to ache. "So much of science is manual labor," he said as they strained to lift another carton of rubble onto the sifter's grid. "Just plain donkey work. Hours of it. Years of it. All for the chance of making a discovery." "It's a lot easier in the nano lab back at Cellini," Doreen said, puffing slightly from exertion. "Nanomachines are teensy little things." He laughed. "And the moon's gravity is even lighter than Mars's." "We should be using nanomachines here," she said. "Here? For what?" "They could build bigger domes for us, pull out atoms of iron and other metals from the ground, and build really strong domes, big as you want." Carlton felt impressed.
"You could do that?"
"Sure," she replied, her voice eager. "Back at Cellini, they build spacecraft out of carbon soot. Nanomachines turn the carbon into pure diamond, stronger and lighter than steel."
"So you think we could build a bigger, safer base with nanobugs?"
She nodded brightly inside her helmet.
"She's really good-looking," he thought. "Not much of a figure, but her face is pretty, with those big, soulful, gray-green eyes."
Carlton smoothed the rubble over the grid and reached for the switch that would start the sifter working again. "That's a funny-looking piece of rock," Doreen said, pointing to one of the shards on the grid. Carlton grunted and picked up the odd-shaped rock in his gloved hand. It rested in his palm easily. He held it for a moment, then turned it over and brought it up, almost touching his visor so he could look at it more closely. He goggled at it. He actually felt his eyes bugging out, felt the breath gush out of him. "Dr. Carlton?" Doreen said. "Carter, are you okay?" It took several tries before he could say,
"It's a funny-looking piece of rock, all right. It's a vertebra.
I'll eat camel dung if it's not a goddamned mother-loving vertebra.